woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
Lord, welcome to Bay Station Giants. I'm tonight. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, turn out the lights. The party's over, as they say. I know, you got those Super Bowl tickets for the Bears, though, Manny? We'll just cover with those.
Yeah, the Bears look good.
Yeah, so the Cubs looked good a while ago, too. Not so much last night. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Still pouting.
I don't know if I could handle him go three more games with no hits, but
well, it's a good point.
Yeah, it's
a good point. It was somehow fitting that the final inning went strikeout. So,
yep, they when you do the things you've always done, you get the results you always got. Is that the line? I'm kind of surprised though. Maddie and I were talking about it on the way in. I really saw a huge tone change in these guys' approach to hitting. Early in the year, and I was giving accolades without knowing the reason why, to Chili Davis and a lot of other stuff, but it seems like when they lost a couple people and they got a little fatigued, they really reverted to form, didn't they? Everybody just kind of swinging away, and I don't know, it just seemed to me that they kind of reverted back
to
form. Well,
in some cases, reverted to form of a few years ago.
That's what I meant. Yeah, that's what I meant. And I'm not so sure. Not so sure why, but man, it's they don't really have any ability to run, and you stole the one base, and essentially stole the one run at the cost of taking out your best hitter for six innings. So I'm not so sure that worked.
Yeah,
out.
And I can't blame them for doing it at the
no,
time.
Me neither,
they needed the run badly, so I can't blame them for doing it. But boy, that came at a price later on, didn't it?
You know, as soon as it happened. And they tied it up, and I'm thinking, what makes them think they're not going to be in extra innings tonight? Without Rizzo, but I don't know if he can necessarily play for extra innings.
But don't put him in, and it's likely that you don't go to extra innings. So
well, that's true too.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's a tough one, and you're just not. I mean, there's literally people that have not gotten somehow or another, Kevin, that the two or three games they won down the stretch where they got like three. Hits and like one guy hit a home run and they won 1-0 or 2-1. I don't know if that became the mindset or not the fact that you only want two hits. I don't think that was a mindset, but instead of trying to manufacture a run, you try to hit the one out. And I don't know, just there's nothing to be said when the night before you got three hits and how many did you get last night? 13 innings, six, five?
Yeah, not many. I would only have one big disagreement. You know, I wish they could have gone another inning or two with Lester. That's great. But, again, I get why you'd pinch hit, and Happ came in and got a walk. I don't understand the choice of Hayward in the bases-loaded two-out situation rather than Schwarber.
Yeah, I don't either.
The only thing...
Hayward has looked like bad Jason Hayward since he got back.
So I thought about that too, and I think I agree with you just solely because, not because Schwarber's been doing anything, he's been horrible for a long stretch now, but he has a better chance of drawing a walk, and obviously a walk gets you a run there. So I just to put myself in Madden's shoes, I'm thinking he's going to put Hayward in for defense anyway, and maybe he wants Schwarber for another opportunity if you need a solo home run, and he's thinking we're down one, let's save Schwarber for that potential opportunity that could happen, and we're going to put Hayward in for defense anyway. That's the only thing I can think that justifies it. Otherwise, I think Schwarber's the right guy just because he could potentially draw a walk. Neither guy can hit. So, you know, I didn't think either guy had a chance of getting a hit. But Schwarber has a high walk rate.
That's true. You see little spots in the inning, and as a softball manager, such as that is, the inning, it turned out to not really hurt him, although, you know, maybe it did, because, you know, another inning, who knows if Hendrick, but the inning where there were three guys up, and then Lester, they had every intention of letting Lester pitch another inning. I mean, he the inning before, he was the fourth guy up. He was, and so the three schlumps in front of him go down like 10 pins. One of those guys, I don't care if you go out and mug the pitcher, one of those guys has got to get on base. He's got to bunt. He's got to do something. He's got to wait for the walk, which they didn't. I mean, I know it's harder. Obviously, I can't do it. It's major league. It's very, very difficult to do. One of those guys has to get on to turn the order because Lester has to bat that inning. Otherwise, you have to pull him the next inning for a pinch hitter leading off because I think he had another inning left in him.
I love that analysis. One of the guys has to get on. I would have said that for every inning.
No, but I'm saying the situation is...
They're trying to get on.
No, but the situation is...
Yeah, if I can defend Tom on this, they got to get better at bats than they were getting.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair. Yeah, I you're total agreement there.
Yeah, because there was so much, you know, so much free swing and so much chasing bad balls that, you know, you're just not giving... They weren't giving themselves chances.
But that's when people are pressing. I ran into Dr. Eric last night. He goes, look, they're all pressing. They're either swinging at the first pitch or they're doing something. I mean, they look like a team that's pressing, which obviously they are. But I mean, whenever with the two girls on the team that we play on, when I was a little better, I always put myself in front of the girls, knowing that you got to do something. You got to find a way to take a walk or whatever because you need to, even if there's two outs, you need that girl to bat that inning. And the pitcher is the equivalent of the girl, even though Lester's not a bad hitter. But I mean, I'm saying, do you even think that somebody just has to get on here because otherwise we're going to burn this guy? And we don't have that, and who knows, knew you're going to get that good of an inning out of Chavez after he pitched two innings the night before. I mean, you just got to think differently. And I don't know if they are. I suspect they probably are. They get paid a lot of money to do it, but. Plus, they ran up against some really good pitchers.
Another thing, the fact is, the last two games, they were both 1-1 in the eighth inning. It's not like the other team was lighting the Cubs fire.
Right.
They're high-pressure games with really, really good pitching on both sides and guys making plays defensively. And in the eighth inning or later, in last night's case, the other team was able to string hits together and win a game, and the Cubs could never get that second hit, with the exception of Baez getting the big two-out double. And that was, you know, a walk, or no, Rizzo got a hit. So that was the only inning where they had two hits in an inning that I can recall. Last night, the Rockies had to hit three singles in a row off Hendricks to scratch across a second run. It's not like the other teams are winning 10-1 here. These are really tough games.
Sure.
And the Cubs were not able to get two hits in a frickin' inning.
I had a professor in grad school, and somebody asked him about pressure. He goes, pressure is easy. He says, if you're good enough, pressure makes you better. If you're bad, it makes you worse. You know, and I mean, I think the reason why the Cubs don't get any clutch hits is they don't get any hits. I mean, if you get 10 hits a game, one of them is going to be a clutch hit, right? I mean, but if you're not, they need, with their station-to-station baseball, because they don't run except for the one guy, they need three hits an inning. And when you get three hits a game, how the hell are you going to get three hits an inning? Right? I mean, where's the math?
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, part of it is, you know, I believe in the concept of productive outs, too. If you make an out in advance a runner and get them in scoring position with less than two outs rather than striking out, that's a big deal. There's people who say an out's an out, and I'm saying no. There are things that you can do that help the cause, even if you make an out.
Well, you know what was interesting last night, and it shows you how little zero respect. I mean, I know I talk all the time about if you have people that are fast and are not even base stealers, but maybe even somebody who might think about it, you change the pitcher's routine. And the Cubs don't have anybody like that. So they're, in defense of the batters, even with people on base, you're constantly fighting balls in the dirt. you know, because they have no respect for anybody running. And even what's the guy's name? It's the designated base stealer, mini.
Terrence Gore.
He came out and look what happened. They just conceded him second base. They didn't change anything, which I thought was really interesting. They didn't try and hold him on. They didn't try and wing fastballs at the batter to where maybe the guy might put one out. They just said, screw it, give this guy second base. We got Rizzo out. Let's just work on the batter. And it turned out it didn't work because Baez got the hit. But I mean, they made no changes whatsoever. You have to disrupt. You have to try and disrupt things that people do, and the Cubs don't necessarily do that. If you got a pitcher that wants to pitch down low in the dirt, you want somebody at first base that is possibly ready to go, and you got to sit the catcher going, look, I don't want four in the dirt. This guy in first base, I got to throw a fastball. You might get one out. But
you don't want to see pitches out of the strike zones a nonstop, a steady diet of pitches down there. Stop swinging at them.
Well, they'll never.
It really is, you know, kind of simple. I know it's hard to do. I can't imagine, you know, last time, and it was a long time ago, that I went into a fast pitch batting cage. I was reminded as why I was a softball player.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but can some,
you know, I know how hard it is, but that is what they do, and I can only imagine in some cases, you know, and I will talk about Baez as good a year as he had, or I will talk about Chris Bryant, that, you know what, how much better would you be if you just stopped swinging at crap?
Well, last night there was two specific at-bats in extra innings that really drove me nuts, and A-Rod pointed them out, but they were obvious to anyone watching. One was in the 12th, two out with Bryant up, two outs, nobody on, Gore's on deck, and A-Rod's going, if you're Chris Bryant, you have to know they're not going to throw you anything in the strike zone with Terrence Gore on deck. You just have to know that, and you can't expand your strike zone. And sure enough, he strikes out in three pitches that were outside of the zone. I mean, there was nothing in the strike zone. Then the next inning, it's 3-2 to Terrence Gore, who has one hit in his entire life, regular season and postseason combined. And A-Rod goes, if you're Terrence Gore, you know, the pitcher's trying to throw a strike here, but there's only a 50% chance he's going to throw a strike. The bat doesn't leave your shoulder. And he throws a ball in the dirt, and Terrence Gore swings at it. I'm thinking, yeah. How is that even possible that you are swinging there? I couldn't.
Yeah, was that Davis still pitching?
No, it was in the 13th inning. It was
later on.
Yeah,
I remember the at-bat. And, yeah, all he had to, if he didn't swing, he probably could get to third base.
If he doesn't, he's leading off the 13th. You're down 2-1, and it's 3-2. And the pitch before almost hit him. In fact, they thought it hit him at first, and then they recalled it or reviewed it and found that the ball didn't hit him. So it's 3-2. If he doesn't swing there, and the guy throws the ball in the dirt, it's a double, maybe a triple, with nobody out. And now a fly ball ties the game. And it's like, that's the mental stuff that I don't understand.
What position did they put him in? Where was he
playing? He played the entire game, left field.
Okay.
When he came in, because they didn't have anyone else. They were out of guys.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Before your time, Eddie, the pitcher that pretty much dominated forever in the relief spot was Bruce Sutter. Nobody could hit the guy. And the most fun game of the year was the All-Star game. Because in those days, you know, the American League never played the National League, and they had never faced the guy when he first came up with the split finger. It basically looked like a fastball waist high. The guy would take a swing, and it would be in the dirt. I mean, it absolutely dropped like nothing I've ever seen before or since. And the only way they combated the guy was they just gave people a take sign with 3-2. And all of a sudden, he started walking people to where he had to actually be aware that, you know, that they were telling people not to swing. And they're not doing that now. And these guys are doing the same thing. These curveballs, they're pretty wicked, but they end up all in the dirt. It's not like they're at the knees.
I couldn't believe that Gore didn't have a take sign 3-2. I mean, maybe it's insulting to a major leaguer to give him a take sign on 3-2, but in that situation, the guy's never had. He's had one hit in his entire life.
Well, yeah, it's insulting to a major league hitter, Matt. He's not a major league hitter.
Right, he's not. He's not even close to a major league hitter.
But there's some pitchers that you've been up there three times. You've shown no ability to hold off on the one that's a 56-footer. I guess I'm going to give you the take sign. If you don't like it, lump it. Right? As they used to say.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Anywho, the...
Matt mentioned A-Rod. I went over to check out the StatCast broadcast, early version of it on ESPN2, just to see what they were doing, and I stuck with it the whole game.
Jason Benetti was hosting that, and who are the other two guys? Is that Eddie Perez, and who's the third guy? Do you know?
I don't remember their names, but yeah, they it was just like watching baseball with some stat nerds. But they had a whole lot of a whole lot of good stuff in there. I don't know if every broadcast should be that way or not, but just for one night, I kind of enjoyed the.
Well, they were better than the two guys the night before. The night before, the guys were terrible.
Yeah, they were.
The one thing I like when Bryant threw the guy out at second base and tried to tag up, and then Jessica Mendoza goes, "God, is that insulting as an outfielder if somebody tag up at first?" he got him, but God, is that insulting? I thought that was great. It is insulting, pretty much, because it was a medium deep fly ball, and a guy tries to advance to second base. Anyway, so Kevin, we've got Trump coming out this morning mocking the Kavanaugh accuser. The guy just cannot keep it zipped while the FBI is doing their stuff, and just let them come out with whatever they're going to come out with. I and see what happens. I'm going to trust the FBI on this one, although I don't know. Wayne yesterday was saying that there's investigations and then there's investigations, that there's some that are real deep and some that aren't, and he thinks
that, yeah, you know, and he mentioned like there's the investigations that people face, like if they're going to go visit the White House or something. I have heard way too many people for a long time, this is not just this week or anything else, saying that those the investigations for judicial nominations are a virtual colonoscopy. It did kind of raise an eyebrow when I heard that yesterday, because that is not the story that's been told before it needed to be told, frankly, before anybody needed that to as a defense.
I would there's something about the amount of people in high places that have come out of these schools that caused them to not talk about drugs in the Congress, and it caused them to, there's some places they're not going here. What did he say? The one senator, the lady from Virginia, went to the girls' school, and was there another guy who went to Georgetown Prep? I mean, they're all over. I mean, if you were to put a...
Well, yeah, Tom, but it's just like all the Ivy League people that are in government.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Just the people in the feeder schools to the Ivy League.
But I'm saying the last thing anybody wants here is to put a list of, like, all 80 graduates that year and all the parties and all the nights they were messed up, them and the women. Nobody wants that plastered around Washington, I don't think. So, and I wouldn't either if I was one of those people.
Yeah, they don't, but you know what? I will not be surprised if you start getting some journalists, and in this case it may be right wing journalists, who start digging into the background of some of these people doing the questioning, and just to expose hypocrisy, this will not surprise me at all. If you want to make it fair game, you better be clean.
Well, is there any place on earth that's any more hypocritical than this country, in Washington?
Who was it? Fred Thompson said when he left the Senate and went back into acting, he said, it's good to be back in Hollywood. When I was in Washington, I missed the sincerity of the people in Hollywood.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is there any possible way? I guess, this is an interesting question, because you and I... Well, we don't come from different areas. We come from the same area, but you have morphed into an area that's more middle America, I'm going to say, than Chicago. I see Chicago as being the exact same as when Mike Royko was here, and he said the motto should be, where's mine?
Where's mine, yeah.
And I've met some of the people in Indiana, the lady who's one of the legislators, and to me, she's straight as all get out. Actually cares about her job, cares about her state. I mean, doesn't really care about being on TV and all the other kind of stuff. Doesn't look like she plans on being a state senator. Although she did make a shot at governor because she didn't like the guy was running. But I thought our Representative Matt Murphy, or Senator Matt Murphy, here did a nice job when he's come on the show. And then all of a sudden he quit. Now he's a lobbyist. So, I don't know where that went. But, I mean, where does this break happen? Between all of a sudden somebody is kind of legit, and all of a sudden you get to a spot where it seems like if you're not running with that gang, I know people here who will remain nameless, although you probably can tell I'm talking about, who is never going to you know, he was going to, I don't know what his first job here was. He was an alderman. He was never going to have a second job. You know, he was just going to take the alderman's salary. He was not going to be one of the Chicago people that used it as a part-time job and, you know, or the lawyer on the side representing people against the city, you know, that kind of crap. Sure enough, a year later, he's got some deal where they're putting ATMs in places, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it just, once you're in there, you all of a sudden figure that if everybody else is doing it, I'm falling behind, or, you know, what is the deal? I had some stuff I wanted, I dug it a few days ago, so I have to dig for it. But they're talking about the amount of money, outside money on both sides now flying into, you know, 10 of these key representative races. You know, Kevin, I don't want outside money in there. I mean, I know I'm getting nowhere with this, but I don't think the Constitution ever anticipated that. I don't think the Constitution ever anticipated a corporation. So when you get somebody, you know, I mean, I've actually talked to a few people where, you know, I said, okay, why do you even like this guy, Kevin? Why couldn't it be somebody else, male, female, or whatever? It looks to me like he was a little loose with some of the truth in front of the committee, which, you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't be either if everybody's bearing down on you like that. But why does it have to be? And somebody, well, he's going to be a strict constitutionalist. Okay, fine. Well, in my mind, and I could be wrong, 9 out of 10 next big cases, I mean really big cases that affect people in this country, are going to have to do with antitrust, they're going to have to do with Google being too big, they're going to have to do with information holding by people, they're going to have to do with, you know, the federal government finally coming down on one of these guys and going all the way to the Supreme Court. There's nothing in the Constitution about any of that stuff, Kevin. So what does that even mean? I mean, does it mean you always go for somebody big because those are the people who put you there, or somebody small? I mean, I don't even know. But the things that come up right now, tell me whether Disney should buy whoever the hell they were buying. Was it Fox? Tell me where that is in the Constitution. I mean, it has nothing to do with you know, the stuff in there. I mean, we're beyond that. It has to do with whose side are you on.
But it's not specifically addressed in the Constitution, and part of the beauty of the Constitution, as far as I'm concerned, is that it doesn't. It outlines very, very specific roles for the federal government and then says all else is left to states. Well, you can argue about that and what, you know, what that really means to states, but it also, you know, it provides a roadmap, and what happens is that then Congress is allowed to make laws. So when you talk about combinations of, you know, and large mergers, well, we have antitrust laws. Antitrust laws pass muster with the Constitution, as they should, and so, you know, the question is, you know, when they bring it, if it comes before the court, some of these combinations, or if it comes to privacy, or if it comes to a bunch of other things, does it fit the law, and does it fit the intent of the law? And one of the things that people who say I want a strict constitutionalist is they don't want people reading things into the Constitution that aren't there. These are things that should go back to legislatures, whether it be state or whether it be federal, where we do something, and, you know, ideally we do something by consensus. That's the problem that a lot of people have. When they say they want a strict constitutionalist, they're saying we don't want the court deciding what the law is. We want the court interpreting what the law is.
The court it does that every single day. We have the lead-off antitrust thing is a Sherman Act. Every combination that could result in a restraint of trade among the various states, I can almost get it word for word, is considered to be a felony and is against, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it is very plain. And yet, it's okay if you can't, that the AT&T can buy DirecTV. Okay, well, wait a minute. But the only competitor to a cable company, when there's only one in every alley, unless you happen to be lucky like I am and there's two, the only one is a satellite. Now we got two satellites. So AT&T's got, you know, half the cable or some percentage of the cable. Now if Comcast buys the other one, who's left, Kevin? I mean, and there's a law, and yet it's fine. Okay, because the bureaucracy on both sides, left or right, who's ever in there, has written all the regulation. They've run right over the law. But if you and I try
they do.
If you and I try and sue that combination and say, we want to win an, we want a class action saying Chief and Kevin want their cable bill down $50 a month because it's, guess what, it's a monopoly. I'm going to say that it gets interpreted by the current courts as being Kevin and Chief get the bleep out of here. Because, and yet, we clearly have the law on our side, in my mind, because that's the nice thing about everybody in court, they all think they have the law on their mind, but how is this a constitutional issue? This has to do with politics, it has to do with big versus small. And it looks to me like big's winning. Big. I mean, we're having a combination in the insurance industry. There's five companies that do this Medicare business, which obviously is lucrative as all get out, because everybody wants in it, and before Obamacare, the first thing he did was have people diving into that business. That's where a lot of the money is. Now they're going to go down to four. Okay, now that's not a problem. What if it's three? What if it's two? For God's sake, Kevin, these are what I see these people being faced with. And to me, this has nothing to do with being, it has to do with which side you think, you know, buttered your bread. And this particular guy's coming from the side where I think he thinks the big guy's buttered his bread. That's just me. Now, I don't know, I'm not in the guy's mind, but clearly that's, you know, I mean, the Trump administration has favored everybody big. Even though he said he was going to kill Boeing. Boeing goes up every day. I should have faded this guy and be rich. SP Futures up 850. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hammond, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 9. Dow futures up 78. Nasdaq futures up 25. West Texas down a whole 6 cents. 10-year yield up 0.01, so it's 3.074. Over in Europe, we've got a little bit of a mixed bag. The DAX is unchanged. FTSE up 44.6%, CAC around up 31.6%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 159, that's 0.7%. They've been up. Shanghai up 29, that's 1%, 28.21. That was the same 29 they were up yesterday, so I'm going to say they're closed today. Hang Seng down 35.1. Oil. West Texas, like I said, down 6. Brent down 13, so not much going on there. Natural gas up another penny, 3.17. It is, that's one of the nicest moves if you have been long it. Not real easy to be long natural gas. It's a huge contract. We did have some people back in the day that traded it here at PTI, but that's a, like I said, that's a massive contract. RBOB, actually down a little bit, down to 2.12. And we have gold is, down 50 cents, 1206. It's up from like, 1190. So it was up on a pretty good day yesterday. Silver up 7 cents, 1476. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a significant issue on I-80, Chief, out by Joliet, eastbound between Richards and Briggs. We have a semi-crash involving a motorcycle and a fire now. Just past the on-ramp from Richards there on the eastbound I-80. This has 80 completely closed right now, causing all kinds of headaches for folks in the southwestern suburbs. So keep that in mind if you travel on I-80 in the mornings out by Joliet specifically. It's going to be a while for that to get cleared up. All lanes are currently blocked on the eastbound side, and it's affecting the westbound side as well. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford at this hour. Stevenson and Eisenhower, normal traffic volumes, no accidents to report. Same with the Kennedy and Edens, all quiet as far as accidents are concerned. Off the expressways, 115th Street between Keeler Ave and Pulaski Road, there's a some police activity, and it has that closed, 115th closed there between Keeler and Pulaski Road. Police are investigating a shooting on the 4000 block of West 115th Street, and that's why on the south side. 79th.
Whoa. It's where's high school is.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a shooting there.
And that's well.
Yeah, 79th and Sarah Avenue, there is a crash involving two semis that's causing blockage there at 79th and Sarah. In the western suburbs, out near Lamont, we have a crash Boughton Road at I-355 that just came across, so keep that in mind. North side, everything looking okay. Weather today, we have a strange warm day today, and then we drop back down into the 60s again and 70s for the rest of the week. But today, hot, very windy, overcast skies, a high of 86, well above normal, obviously, for October 3rd. Right now it's clear and 61 going up to 86. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today, a high of 85. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 73. In sports, as we've been talking about, For the better part of the morning, the Cubs season is over. They lost in the wild card game at home last night, 2-1 in 13 innings. So the Rockies will advance to take on the Brewers. The American League wild card game tonight will be in the Bronx between the Yankees and the A's. Chief.
And the sports guys this morning have everybody in the team leaving. Trade everybody for whatever you can get for them. Even though
I think there's going to be some significant changes, you know, regarding a mix of, obviously, I think Russell will never play for the Cubs again. I think Hap and Almora, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two guys, if not both of them.
Oh, they'd be crazy about Almora, I think.
Are moved for pieces. Not saying that's a good decision or a bad decision. Not sure that it'll happen, but wouldn't be surprised. And then I still believe in Schwarber. I think he was more hurt than people realize. He walks a lot. He has power. So I still kind of believe in him. He showed that he can be a lot better left fielder as he was this year. So I think he'll be back. Obviously, Bryant, I'm hoping, gets back to 100% because he looked like a shell of himself. He does not look like himself. And then Baez is great, and Rizzo's great. And, you know, Bryce Harper's in the mix and some other free agents. So I think there'll be a lot of changes.
I think somewhere along the line you've got to find somebody in the organization or draft you need, especially with the pitching the way it is now. You got to get a little more speed. You got to get a leadoff man. I know there's only about five or six in all of baseball that are probably traditional leadoff men, but you need to get one. And you need to have some people that have a little bit more bat control. I mean, there are people that had whole careers where if somebody was on second base could hit the ball to the right side, and now we have shifts where people, there's not even anybody on one side and nobody can get the ball over there. And I don't know, it's kind of weird, but, hey Kevin, I want to delve a little bit into this stuff here and, all the things that are going on. And we, obviously the theme of the show is we try and, corral some of the banter on the political side, to either drive it towards something we can make money off of, which is usually kind of tough. Especially lately, it doesn't seem to have much of an effect on the market unless you get the news a little early. But at least where you don't get caught by it. But I remember I've talked a little bit while you were on a couple times about this piece of paper or article that I'll dig out here one of these days having to do with voting and how most people have decided that it's not really worth an awful lot of their time to educate themselves on what's going on because their vote really isn't worth squat, basically. In a lot of states, it's really not worth anything because so many states lean one way or the other so much that whichever side you're on, it's almost not worth going down the street, at least for the presidential election with the Electoral College the way it is. Having said that, what people end up doing is they pick one side or another. And then they essentially, if you're a right-leaning guy, most people, we're going to believe most of the stuff that the right people say, and if they're a left-leaning guy or lady, you're going to do the same thing on the left. Well, there's big flaws in that, and obviously neither you or I are big proponents of that, even though we both realize that we've maybe learned more because you're teaching school and I'm on the air, and it's my job to kind of watch this stuff for my clients, so we're kind of in unusual spots, that maybe it is worth it for us to actually spend our time, you know, listening to basically to all this crap. But it is interesting today when there's an article here about economics and in the economics section of Bloomberg. Trump bets bashing China will sway voters before bill comes due. And then it says 40% of the voters in Wisconsin support tariffs on Chinese imports. And I think that this is a huge example of if you support Trump, you support stuff he does, even though the connection between putting a tax on you to buy Chinese stuff, stopping the intellectual property stuff from Boeing to China and other things, to me there's like no connection there. But the people are willing to go with their side without even really. Now I would say that this is a bad deal for people in Wisconsin, but that would just be me because I don't think that they read this stuff. By the way, you sent me that thing yesterday. I was cursing you on the air. The NAFTA agreement. I'm into it about
just
seven.
Just like you do off the air.
Yeah, well, but I was up to about page 70. I couldn't even read. What was all that stuff? Cheese curd from this kind of stuff, sour, unless it's on note 15 and page 14. For God's sake, who the hell goes through all that crap?
You know what? It really gives you some insight into into what the negotiations really get down to. Is, you know, we think of it in terms of, you know, what's the big stuff, you know, and there's a few big stuff things in that deal, but really when it gets down to it, these negotiators are sitting down there picking their way through all kinds of minutia.
But every line must mean something to somebody.
It certainly does, and you know whether there's a lobbying group behind it or whether it's just, you know, we're gonna give you more access to the Canadian market for dairy products, except if it's a certain kind of cheese, that's
yeah,
ours.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the thing, and again, that's my point, Kevin. Is I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but one thing that I think President Trump has done that I really abhor is his use of tweets has degraded people's understanding of some of the most complex things as something that could be 30 characters or 40 characters. It just, there aren't very many things on earth that can be explained away in a tweet. I mean, once in a while, you get a Ronald Reagan say something like, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, pull down this wall, and that's all you had to say. I mean, once in a great while, you get to do something like that, but it's...
Well, I my bigger problem with it is that that the man doesn't really appreciate the value of an unexpressed thought.
No. No. Is my...
So, you know, look, even if he steps on his message all the time, that's a political problem that he has, and you know, people like it. We've talked a lot about people liking that he'll punch back on issues, and you know, he doesn't take any. You know, he's going to counterpunch everything. He's not going to take anything. But so often that when he does have good news, he steps all over it by doing something like putting out a controversial tweet, and then nobody's talking about whatever his good news is, and instead they're talking about the controversial tweet. I think, you know, those are issues, but, you know, more to the point is sometimes you just have to shut up.
Well, as my...
You know, maybe not all the time. Maybe it is good that somebody counterpunches a little bit more often. But sometimes, yeah, just need to say, I'm better off not doing anything.
My freshman English teacher, Brother Copper, who I guess is no longer with us, somebody said something really stupid in class, and he goes, you know what? Sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool and open it and remove all doubt.
Yeah, was that a Mark Twain comment?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think it was his. But I mean, the 40% of people in Wisconsin, I mean, I understand who you support and you like to believe the people you support. I've gotten to the point, Kevin, where I don't believe either side. I think they all just are absolutely two-faced. I mean, is that a good spot to be in? I mean, I guess people, you know, still consider me this liberal, but I don't believe anything they say either. You mean, do I believe anything Dick Durbin says? I mean, I used to believe Paul Simon. I used to believe Paul Douglas.
You know, anything Dick Durbin says,
yeah.
I get that one.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, I don't. I mean, I think it's all they're all playing this game to the extremes of their party, and I don't think that's. I mean, does anybody really think that these winging tariffs on China benefits some guy in Wisconsin when he goes to the store and he's got to pay more? I think most don't really realize. I mean, I'm sure if you gave them a quiz, I'm hoping most of them would say, "I know it's a tax on me," but I don't know. I was stunned, Kevin, when I went back to the year before the income tax came into being. Like 50% or 45% of the federal government's income was tariffs. So does anybody not think that they're not gleeful over these tariffs? And people are loving them, and they're paying. it's like when Tom Sawyer got the other aides to paint the fence for him. I mean, we spent 6 months or a year telling people how we can't stand taxes. We drop your income tax $75, even if that's even true. And then all of a sudden, the next year, we raise all these tariffs, and people are gleeful on both sides. I mean, how stupid are we collectively?
Well, I get the idea of using it as a pressure tactic to bring them to the table, and I don't know if was it here or was it on Stocks and Jocks or was it somewhere else. You know, there was someone who said, "Look, they're working on deals. You know, they're trying to finalize with Korea, with Japan. They're doing some things with Vietnam to the point where China's going to have to come to
that
the table."
That was me yesterday.
The the entire rest of the region is going to be a better option to doing business in China, and they will lose. Well, okay, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's an interesting point of view. My point is, I get using it as a pressure tactic. My problem with it is that if that puts upward pressure on prices, which it will, then what happens when you come to an agreement? Will prices go back down?
No.
And I'm thinking the answer is no.
No.
Once you've set up a price level that the buying public is used to paying, it's going to stay there.
Well, that's Kevin. I think that one of the things, and you know, Maddie can that there is a theme to the show, believe it or not, is that everything depends on everything else, and much more so than I think everybody, including me, realizes. You have this sort of monopoly thing or combination thing going on in this country, and it's been going on a while. This is not a Trump issue or whatever. This has just been going on a while. I mean, I'd go back to Reagan, where they didn't prosecute an antitrust thing in 8 years. And I also question what the people in the antitrust department did for friggin' 8 years. what do they do all day? Anyway.
Are we paying them to do what?
What exactly are they doing? Anyway, so when you're down to like, what are we down to here? 2-3 big steel companies? Something we always had, you know, some big steel companies, but we've narrowed the field here pretty dramatically to where we're importing a lot of steel from everywhere else. Now, whether it's right or wrong, and you know, who knows? But the fact is, we're down to only a few places here. So if you drop a tariff on everybody else, you've essentially really created a cartel, haven't you? And the pricing power of these three people, and again, I've been adamant the entire time this tariff comes out, every single product is a different story. You know, there's a million stories in Naked City, and this is one of them. I mean, I'm going to say that the steel people have been gleeful. They've been able to, because there's so much that's coming in from the outside, that the three or four people left, and there's a lot of little specialty guys. There's Finkels and people like that. I mean, I'm not saying, but by and large, Kevin, I think they all got to raise their prices, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30%. I don't know. I mean, I think they're happy as a clam. Now, other stuff might come in, and there might be people that make it in Finland. There might be people that make it in Korea, Thailand, who the hell knows. And the 20% tariff there, you might be paying 5 cents more for the dollar shot glass at IKEA. I don't know. But, I mean, this is a massive problem. And all you have to do is read through the thing you sent me, and you realize this is more than just a bunch of people in Wisconsin hearing Trump or the right say something and saying tariffs are a good idea. I mean, some places maybe they are, some places maybe they're not. And some places you're just paying, buddy. Bend over and thank you, sir, may I have another. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Well, the question is, you know, what are the legitimate circumstances for a tariff? So you may not like it for a trade war, and that's fine. But what would you consider legitimate reasons to have one? Well,
I would
decide that I have an industry that does need to be protected,
sure,
for whatever reason. You know, we need to have a thriving domestic, you know, pick one, steel industry.
Yeah, I would say
that. You know, and that's fine. So you know, so you need to make it more competitive, or do you need to make it more competitive temporarily? Although nothing's ever temporary when it comes to a tax of any kind.
Well, funny you should mention that, because for 50 years or so, or maybe 60 or 70 after World War II, our steel companies stuck with an open hearth, and other ways of doing it are more efficient. Now, if you were to say in 1950, hey, look, we gave all this money to Germany and Japan, and now these guys got these new steel companies that they're more efficient than ours, would I have supported a tariff? Would I have supported a tariff for 10 years, say? And look, you bleeps, you better use every dime of the prices you're charging other people that I'm giving you to upgrade your plant and equipment to where 10 years from now you're competitive and you don't need me anymore. Would I have supported something like that? Absolutely, Kevin. I don't think that's what happened. I think the money went to God knows where. They sold out the places anyway, and they all got... I'm just saying, I don't think it happened.
Well, an example in the late 80s, early 90s, when we were trying to protect the United States auto industry because the... First the Japanese and then Korean manufacturers became so successful. The only one that wasn't successful was Yugoslavia.
What do you mean? You still got that Yugo?
The Yugo, yeah. And because you could afford to buy two, but you needed to buy two, and then you needed to pull one around behind you so that when yours broke down, you could just get in the other one. by the way.
You had a parts car. You were good.
Yeah, you had to own, you know, you had to own a parts car. Anyway, the point was that that was supposed to buy time for American automobile manufacturers to get more efficient, and in fact, American automobile manufacturers grew their finance operations. You know, your GMACs
right.
and Ford Motor Acceptance and all of those.
They decided to become bankers. Yeah,
they became bankers more so than they already were.
Right.
So, you're right. But you know, are there legitimate reasons? Good. Let's deal with those, and then what's left? Now you're talking trade wars.
Well, I mean, take timber.
And, you know, hey, if it's a negotiating tactic, fine. But as I said, I don't think those prices are coming back down.
No.
When they reach an agreement.
Well, because when you give, you essentially have three people, not saying there aren't some independent people left, there are, but they're dwindling. You've got Home Depot, you've got Lowe's, and in the eastern two-thirds of the country, you've got Menards. Give those guys a chance to bring the price of nails up, and they all do. I don't see, if all of a sudden a steel tariff goes, I don't think I see Mort Menard running in there and saying, the tariff's off, lower those nails down 15%, do you? I mean, he might if somebody else does.
No, I don't see that happening at all. No, you know, most people are going to price to market. So if there is a pricing opportunity, if there's an undercutting opportunity, and Lowe's grabs it first and can sell more nails, but again, what's the elasticity on nails?
Nothing. That's
the point. You need them, and how many people price shop for nails?
How many people?
There might be other items where that matters, but I don't think nails are it.
You price shop for the tile. You price shop possibly for the plasterboard, the 2x4, and all the other stuff is what you get basically stuck where the sun don't shine, the glue, the tape, the nails, and the screws. It's spectacular. But that's retailing, though, right, Kevin? The prime rib is on sale. You walk in and get the prime rib on sale, and you buy all the rest of the stuff to go along with the prime rib. That's where the money is, right?
Well, yeah, and so that really is it. Where are the price sensitivities? Well, in those cases, there will be downward pressure on prices because it's competitive. But in a lot of cases, there people are either not willing to shop, not educated enough to shop because it's something you don't use regularly, or there's some other explanation. But those prices aren't coming back down.
Well, the thing that Russell, how are you?
I'm doing well.
So what would happen if to the price of cardigan sweaters in this country if Russell like moved permanently to Hong Kong?
I always buy mine off season at the
All
end
right.
of the spring.
Oh, God.
I'm a savvy cardigan sweater shopper.
So what do you think of our... Yeah,
do you go elbow patches on those?
I do my best to find them. They're hard to find.
You can always iron them in, you know. Yeah. You still got those.
Yeah. That's true. Then we need to go into the elbow patch business.
But Kevin, you need to speak more like a Washington guy. I think you'd get further. You need to be like Jerome Powell. So, have you seen any evidence of inflation with the tariffs? No, you're the one who wrote and sent me how your friends there are feeling it. Anybody in the manufacturing area is feeling it big time. And he says, "Oh God, we haven't seen any evidence of that yet." So what is he waiting for next month's CPI where he thinks it might not show up for 2 months and he's got to wait till that?
Well, even places that haven't felt it a lot are pretty tapped into it. You know, that people in manufacturing understand commodity prices.
Yes.
They understand them very well. And I think that was ultimately my point when we had an offline discussion about this, is that, they know better than I think we give them credit for knowing.
Well, I've always given to people who are actually in the fight credit for knowing more than anybody else. That's what we try and bring to the table, I think, Kevin. You and I both. I mean,
well, and there's a lot that support, you know, trying to do some kind of, bring them to their knees or at least bring them back to the table because they don't like the status quo. Whether they're going to get a result that they like way better or not, you know, it is almost irrelevant. It's just let's do something. Well, you know, I'm not in that camp of let's do something just to do, but there are some things in here that that make sense to do. And I'll give you one example. I am glad to see even though it's going to put upward pressure on automobiles. I'm glad to see that we're doing something about labor conditions in Mexico, and that, you know, that they should pay more. We should not have people making $3 an hour and be involved in that, setting that kind of standard of living for people, so that we get a better profit margin. I would like to think our companies are more ethical than that.
Now, well, the question is, and I ask this not because I know the answer, if there actually is the politics there or in China, to where people are essentially stealing that money. Now, I'm in China, I think it's a lot of the people in the government. I'm going to say maybe people in some of the drug trades or the politics in Mexico, because I've dealt with some of those people, and not, I always feel like I got to wash my hands. Are they really going to get the raise?
Or I don't know. Time will tell. Or is that just going to force jobs back here, and it's not going to help? Well, that's the problem with the government trying to engineer anything, is there's always unintended consequences. But ultimately, the point is that, you know, back when NAFTA was created, there was supposed to be, when the jobs moved, that was also supposed to improve the standard of living in those areas, and theoretically, then they would buy more stuff that's produced in the United States while they're at it.
And by the way, it
didn't happen.
Well, sure it did. It just didn't happen for them. It happened in China. There's a lot of millionaires that never worked in a factory. How do you suppose they got it? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't quite get to the people we wanted to get to, but that's not unusual in this world, is it? Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. Talk on Friday. SP Futures up 850, Dow Futures up 64. Come back with Mr. Russell Rhodes. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hollings, Mr. Russell Rhodes, and we're on the board. We're in rally mode here this morning. I guess we're just kind of continuing on here. Some areas are not doing very well, but some are. S&P futures up 9.25. Dow futures up 73. NASDAQ futures up 27. Russell, why do you think the bank stocks can't get out of their own way here? I mean, I was going to flip all my people out of my gold and silver. I'm glad I didn't because silver's had a big run-up on gold. Actually, yesterday started the move. One more day like that, and I think I'll be pretty happy with staying there. But I was going to flip everybody in the XLF, and matter of fact, I got kind of bullish in there. It went nowhere. I mean, they can't seem to go anyplace.
Well, they're all the ones that dominate the XLF are so freaking big that it's when you reach a certain size, it's hard to grow it. You know, it's kind of like somebody saying that Apple stock could double from here. Well, Apple stock doubling from here goes from a trillion to a $2 trillion company. You know,
why do you suppose?
So, I think that's what the case is there's so the what's remaining and what dominates the XLF are just such large companies. You know, it's harder to grow a really large company by 10% as opposed to a medium size or a small company.
What do you feel about Eric May's theory that the rise of this management class, essentially the money's not getting out of the place. I mean, they're not, that the banks, if they wanted to, could double or triple their dividends, but they're not. They're just paying each other huge bonuses. It doesn't get out of the place.
Yeah, there's definitely an agency problem going on there. I think another part of it is they want to pay themselves right now because they realize how quickly they could lose. I mean, think about all the Bear Stearns people that had, or Lehman Brothers people that had 90% of their net worth in the company's stock and had been, you know, company men. They're not making that mistake again. If you got out of Lehman at, you know, 40 years old and you got a job with one of the other big banks, you're having to rebuild up your net worth and you're going to grab as much as you possibly can right now. I'm not saying it's right, I think that's the mentality that you see. Is you got to get yours right now because we're probably going to have another. You know, we have these things happen every decade or so, and you don't want to be 50, 55 years old and you know, have the next one happen, and that's going to be the last job you have.
Well, as a matter of fact, funny you should mention that. The late Jim Tyree, who was head of Mesro and spectacular guy, he actually invited me one night to be to a, he was a big shot at the Economic Club of Chicago. So in order to get into that club, you have to have been invited to one of the dinners. So he invited me to one of the dinners, and he, you know, sponsored me in. And it was the day that Bear Stearns went down. You know, it was that long ago. And and he was talking about, he's one of those guys that all he cared about was what was going on in your life. right? I mean, and I said, okay, we've talked about me for a while. What about you? He goes, well, I've had kind of a rough day. I go, why? And he says, I have three or four friends. My best friends are work for Bear Stearns.
Mm-hmm.
And today they lost their job. They had their 401k was, they were one of those places that really was into the Bear Stearns stock.
Bear was probably the biggest one of the banks back then that really encouraged the people to invest in the company.
Right. So he said he had 80% of his retirement or 90% in Bear Stearns stock, lost his job, lost his, and they had a regular retirement plan too, I guess, of some kind, whatever it was. The guy lost about everything, not to mention he lived in a neighborhood where about 30 other Bear Stearns people with houses all went on the market at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was about as bad as it gets. And but I just honestly think that the shareholders are really becoming the part that goes over the fence last. I mean, the boards, we had a for instance, I think I've had enough people tell me, oh, I forgot to scrutinize my bill when I paid it. Is it Commonwealth Edison just had an 8% increase?
It looked a little higher than
yeah.
I think.
Well, now, I mean, in today's world, I know where Eric would come down on this. Where would you say the 8% goes? Now, I know that they gave the state was it's all going to go in infrastructure and lines and stuff. Okay, well, that's their story. Where do you think the 8% goes? I'm going to be a real bleep here and say I'm going to say 5 to 6% of it goes to salary and bonuses, 0 to the people down the line. 1 or 2% to capital improvements so they can say something, and maybe 0.5% to a dividend, maybe 0.5%.
You don't think any of that increase is going to governments?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. I know that if you take a really close look at your cell phone bill, there are a lot of little...
No, I'm talking about...
Was it a rate increase that was 100% the company, or is there another piece to it?
So let's say you
left the government out on the divvying it up. That's
okay, well, I'm going to say that the government probably charges 10% on your gas bill. So
mm-hmm.
so where does that put them? 7.2 went to Commonwealth Edison.
So
if the gross is up 8, mm-hmm. you're right. The net is...
And their costs aren't up that much.
No,
they're not. We're certain of that. Yeah, I teach agency problem in finance at Loyola. I use some extreme examples, but it's a real issue. And as you were talking, I was thinking back to the bank stocks. If they're keeping the earnings, paying themselves a lot more than they possibly should, maybe that's why the stocks can't get out of their way. Maybe some smarter people are realizing they've got no interest in us and. Moving money somewhere else,
either to
maybe a mid-tier bank, a mid-sized bank that is a little bit more shareholder friendly, or a different industry.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Having sat through actually two of these deals where you bring the guy in and they tell you how much you're supposed to pay your CEO, and of course, who hires these people is the CEO, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, you're never going to come in and say the guy's making too much, cut him, because they'll never be hired anywhere else on earth, correct?
Yeah.
Well, the funny part was they were trying to figure out how much, I'm going to say, three chairmans ago at the CBOE made. And so the guys come in from, you know, schmo firm, and they lay all this down about, you know, your guy. We looked all over for comparable people, and...
This is the pay.
The comparable people were the head of the Board of Trade, the head of the New York Stock Exchange, the head of the CME, and who the hell else was the Amex? And you know, your guy's way below. Well, of course, CBOE was nowhere near the size of the Board of Trade or the CME or the New York Stock Exchange in terms of a business. I mean, it was not even close. And
it's bigger, but still not.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so the one of the creatures that was on the board with me, it would ultimately, I'm going to say, was his demise for being on the board. Came in with a Cranes article and said, oh, by the way, the guy was making, I'm going to say, $650 or something, or $550. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, no, you got to get this guy. They didn't want to go over the $1 million number. This is 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because they figured the people on the floor would maybe, ears would perk up on that. So they said, okay, we're going to bring this guy up to like nine something. And with a bonus here and there. So one of the guys on the board brought in a Cranes business article. And he dropped it on the table in a board meeting, or a local board meeting. He said, look, these basically bleeps that came in here. You know, they say your contemporaries are essentially Solomon and, you know, whatever. Well, guess what? There was like 15 companies in there that were about the exact same size as SIBO,
mm-hmm,
in terms of revenue and everything else. You know, say, you know, Russell's metalworking. You employ X number of people, and
a non-financial entity.
Yeah, somebody
where people aren't overpaid.
Yeah, it was somewhat competitive.
Yeah,
and virtually every guy at the time was somewhere between 125 and 200.
Yeah.
I mean, when
the salary difference. Why do you think I went into this industry?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, there. When I was growing, you know, when I was in college and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with myself, I was not going to become a professional athlete. I was not going to be any sort of, you know, professional entertainer or anything else. The next closest thing, you know,
you could have been Archie Bunker.
I'm not that grumpy yet.
Oh, all right.
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
Every day, those damn kids make me more angry.
Oh,
and
God,
more,
yeah,
angry.
Yeah, yeah.
But. But, you know, I looked around, and I'm like, all right, how do I make something for myself? And that's why I chose the financial industry.
Well, no, it's interesting.
And back in the day when we all had on the floor, think about how many, you know, I finished college, moved to Chicago, made like, you know, $5 an hour to be a runner in a place that maybe I could work myself up to make a good coin. There's a reason. And it's unfortunate because that has resulted in a brain drain from other areas.
Well,
admittedly so.
It depends on the time of your life, wasn't it? Wasn't that the name of a TV show?
Yeah, well, or a song, or
something like that. Yeah,
it should be. If not,
well, when I graduated, and well, University of Chicago in '76. I mean, there were banks, and one of my best buddies, who actually went to Notre Dame Business School, he ended up working for Manufacturers Hanover in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you imagine this? Guess what? He managed to. He put the job off until September,
uh-huh,
because he was a bartender and like an assistant manager of this, you know, restaurant bar in Cape Cod, and was making, you know, twice as much at the restaurant bar than these guys. Guess what they offered him? To go.
This is 76.
To go live in New York.
Uh-huh.
Have to wear essentially a Brooks Brothers suit every day with the right ties and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go get the wardrobe. You had to live in New York. Guess what the salary was?
Probably about $10K back then.
He held out for 11.
Okay, yeah, I mean, if you ever, it's kind of funny if you pay really close attention to what they're paying people in Mad Men back in the 60s.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's like, you know, what we paid for, you know, the weekly salaries are what you probably, you know, rack up at series every once in a while.
But nothing was, you're right, nothing was more competitive. I mean, if you drove around the neighborhood, there were 5 savings and loans, a couple of banks. Nothing was more competitive. I mean, if you worked for a bank, even the big ones,
mm-hmm,
because First National, hell, downtown there was Continental, First National, Exchange. I mean, you name the places, right? I mean, there had to be, what, 30 of them down here, 25?
Oh, yeah.
And so
that's all there was on the South
Street.
That's
all there was. And, those guys, the thought of me coming out of grad school with my entrepreneurial bent and going to work for a bank, as opposed to learning about different industries and then maybe going on my own someplace.
Mm-hmm.
I always planned on being an entrepreneur, but I, you know, worked at Pullman other places to learn something first. The thought of you making any money in a bank, I mean, it was a great job in a sense. You always looked
good.
You
had stability.
You had stability.
And you
always looked good. You weren't going to, mm-hmm, get hurt. You weren't going to get, you know, have a punch press land on your arm. I mean, none of that stuff was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So plus you're in the hood. You made enough to drive the nice car and everything. But by and large, you weren't going to get rich. Now, if you hung on to any of those places and you just stayed there if I just would have stayed there at whatever bank it was, did a good enough job that whenever they got bought up by somebody,
mm-hmm,
I had a little stack in my pocket, and, oh, by the way, I was good enough to where they took me. Okay, there's people working for banks now doing God knows what, heads of, like, you know, accounts auto loans department that are making like $275 or something.
Yeah,
I mean, it's unbelievable how much these guys make.
I love the first Wall Street movie for visuals behind things like this, and you know, Gecko at the very beginning of his "Greed is Good" speech, he says, "We've got 18 senior vice presidents up there," and they have them all sitting there smoking cigarettes and paying half attention, and he goes, "And I can't figure out what any of them do." And I still think there are some banks that operate in the same way, you know. My previous employer, or my most recent employer, Sibo, I was talking, I'm just going to quote somebody else. I was talking to somebody that does a financial podcast, and he said, you know, every time I'd go to Sibo and visit in person, I'd meet somebody, and I'd think they were new, and he goes, and they'd been there 8 years, and I had never, and I'd never met them or realized, you know, what their function was there. So, the financial firms also, I think they're very, very people heavy relative to how they need to be.
Well, because
especially in this day and age with technology.
Like my significant other, she says, if you do anything with banks regarding any kind of foreclosures or anything, everybody is going to make something happen. The person goes somewhere else. You talk to a new person the next time. No one will call you back. I mean, it's absolutely bloated with people that in a no other industry could possibly be like that. But I think my generation was a bad one for entrepreneurs. Everybody that I knew when I was 25 or 30 that was an entrepreneur did appreciably better than anybody who worked for anybody else. And I'm going to say in my generation, unless you were the Steve Jobs or the people from Hewlett-Packard in the garage, if you didn't come up with something like that, but if you owned, unless you just were, you know, had the right spot for the restaurant and bought the building to where now the neighborhood grew up around you or something, unless you were, it's been very, very difficult in my generation.
You needed more luck.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. I think that's...
Well, I mean, I mean, right now we have an issue with the... That's why when I listen to Jerome Powell, and Russell, the only reason why that the inflation numbers, when I hear people talk, it's very rare that anybody can just say they know more than the other person talking. Okay, I mean, and virtually any... Because I'll talk about an economics thing, and you'll point out something I never thought of before. Yeah. I'll sit there and go, gee, this Russell actually knows more about me in this one, but I'm never going to tell him that type of thing. And I mean, or Kevin, who digs facts up and there's no tomorrow. Every week, Kevin hits me with something where I was wrong when I said something, right? I mean, but I'll tell you what, there probably isn't anybody you know that knows more about the inflation of that era that's still around than me, because I did it.
You lived through it.
I lived through it, and that was my job at Pullman. Uh-huh. I had classes with Milton Friedman. That's all he talked about. And when I see what's happening now, and I'll hear people say, even there's no inflation because the commodity inflation isn't there. It's different this time. It's a combination of industries tightening up of markets, people looking for a chance to raise prices because they always had pricing power or they were afraid to do it or something. Now all of a sudden you'll see, you go into a restaurant, you go, oh my God, they're up 10% from a month ago. What the hell happened? The price of eggs hasn't gone up. The price of steak hasn't gone up. Pork has gone down. Chicken hasn't gone up. Pork has gone down. It's lower than I've ever seen it, right? And yet, wherever you go, if you get two pork chops, they're $25. And I'm going to say that two pork chops cost the guy $2. Easy. Mm-hmm. And, $3. I'll be, because they're, let's say they're a pound a piece, which is a pretty darn big pork chop. They're $1.50 anywhere if you go to any place that I can go and butcher them up, and that's what they are. So, but it's all of a sudden now you don't have very many landowners. Remember, he bought up Armitage Avenue. The leases for these buildings are dramatic. It's the Fed, you know, pumping the bubble back up.
Yeah.
So now the lease for a restaurant and a building, because they pumped the price of the building, what, up three times from where it was in 2009 or something? It's got to be in some areas. Your lease, God bless, you need $100 from somebody who walks in the door. You don't care if you feed them or not, Russell.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the inflation that I knew back in those days.
And I can't believe that's going to... I'm really starting to think that commercial real estate is going to be the thing that bursts the thing that sneaks up on the markets once again, because I think that pricing power is going to fall apart very, very quickly. Yeah, I travel all over the place. I go out to the middle of nowhere, suburb-wise. I go, and then I'm in Manhattan, and I see two things very frequently at businesses. I see help wanted signs. Everybody's looking for people, but I see a lot of for lease signs. I saw a in New York, one of those, it used to be, I think it was Crazy Eddie's electronics store.
I remember that place. So,
yeah. There's an empty five-story Crazy Eddie's electronics right in the middle of Manhattan with a bunch of police signs all over it. So I do think that there's going to be, I think commercial real estate, they keep trying to jack it up. There's going to be a lot of more and more and more alternatives. My understanding is the Board of Trade building is more than half empty right now.
Oh, yeah. It's like 40% occupied.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
My buddies that run the series, they still do a nice job, but they go, you're really fighting with your buildings 40% full.
Yeah.
But I mean, here's my concern, even with that, though, Russell.
Uh-huh.
Everything you just said, by the way, is very... I don't find that what Kevin and I were talking about, you know, everything depends on everything else is my theme. Are the price of nails going to come down at Home Depot after been selling them from $4 a pound, even though tariff goes? I think the answer is no. But if you look at Armitage Avenue, where I live, which at one point was other than Oak Street, they had all the real high-end ladies' outfits. The place where any female could go shop there as long as she was a one or a two or a zero size kind of thing. The blouse is $500, that kind of thing. They had all those places, and they had a few restaurants. And I'm going to say in the last 10 years, there have been places that are vacant. The guys who own these buildings, they must be such daddy warbucks. The restaurant on the corner was, what's the name of the one in Jackson? Been there forever, across from the train.
Mitchell's.
Mitchell's. Well, it was the Mitchell's and Clybourne and Racine. They did big line on Sundays, Saturdays. You'd swear these guys were knocking them dead. Terrific. Mm-hmm. They were the first $10 omelet in the neighborhood, but really good stuff. They came on the sizzling platter and all bits of everything. Real good stuff. Great milkshakes. You would swear these guys were absolutely rolling in cash. All of a sudden, they're closed. Closed. And I'm going, what the bleep? The guy wants to raise the rent. How much a month? You think this is 6 years ago? They were closed. That place was empty for, I'm going to say, 6 years. You want $15,000 a month? That's a lot of omelets.
Yeah.
So
it's a big upfront cost.
It stays empty. Uh-huh. At the same time, the electric bill's coming at you. The city taxes are coming at you. You know, God knows what you're asking. I mean, what do you suppose the gas bill is compared to 7 years ago? It's double. It's got to be. So the thing, how long, Manny? 5-6 years, the place stayed vacant. And the guy never dropped price. Same way in Armitage.
Waited.
But how much money? I mean, you and I, you teach economics. I try and learn it. You would say that after a few months, and there's four other empty spots in the same shopping center,
you'd start.
The next guy walks in and says, "How about 10?" You grab it.
Exactly.
But that's not happening.
It's not happening.
It's not happening.
It's got to reach a breaking point where that does happen.
You would think.
But where
are the rest of us going to be when they get that breaking point?
You know, I wonder if there are any accounting tricks that you could. I explained how you can manipulate depreciation to manipulate your earnings yesterday in class, and I know that the real estate industry is very much into avoiding taxes and all those other kind of things.
Wait, manipulate's a bad word. Manage.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm trying to teach reality when I'm in the classroom.
Well, you're lucky you got a job.
Yeah. What? Well, I don't think it's caught up to me yet.
Oh, all right.
It'll catch up with me eventually. No, they like it because they feel like they're learning something real.
Well, they do, but I mean, you can't believe, the CIA is going to find you.
No. I'm a small fish. Nobody cares.
Okay.
That's a good thing. That's why I'm willing to admit it right now with a microphone in front of me. But I just wonder if there's something, accounting trick-wise that or tax avoidance-wise, if it's empty, if that allows them to not pay any taxes on the other $15,000 a month they're getting somewhere else.
I think...
You know what I'm saying?
I think you get a huge break on your property taxes if you're not if it's not no income's coming in. I don't know how that works, but
if they're vacant, you know what? If you
but they're got, not going to be zero. They're not going to be zero.
If you got the place across the street and your place is empty, can't you go to the city when you protest your taxes and go, hey, look, man, there's vacancies in my neighborhood. I'm lucky that anybody's renting.
I know people that do that. I don't know what the argument. I know they will say that if I guarantee you, absolutely guarantee you that.
But
one of three firms, Eddie Burke, Verdoliak, or one of my buddies, is working for the Board of Trade, saying, we don't have any people in here. We got to lower the rates.
I guarantee
you that's happening.
I'm certain that we're looking at it from you know, the first couple of chapters in the textbook as, you know, you're missing 15,000 of opportunity costs. Now I'm on chapter 9 where I'm talking about how you can use depreciation, and it actually can help you out earnings-wise into the future. So I wonder if there's something else that's going on.
There must be
with that, because there's got to be another reason for it. That's all I'm saying.
But in Armitage,
yeah.
What's the name of the place? It's on Webster now, Maddie. The Asian place. Hell's name it. It's right. It's where you know what a basketball thing is, the Paul and Webster, just east of Halston.
Yeah.
The restaurant on the north side of the street. It's the Asian.
I know what you're talking about. It's next to the brunch place, but I can't think of the name.
They were, was it, began with a J. July or something.
It sounds like they're not spending a lot on marketing.
But they were on Armitage. And they left, I'm going to say, a decade ago. We used to go there all the time. Dr. J lived right down the block. It was our favorite place. All of a sudden, one day they leave, and then 6 months later, they open up in the new spot. The place they were, vacant. Still vacant. Mm-hmm. And nobody... there must be massive concentration. There's people that have, you know, they have those consignment stores. You know what those things are?
Yeah.
Well, for those that don't, say you got Southside. You have a storefront, and there used to be a high-end, whatever, retail space, and you raise the rent, and they say, up yours, and off they go. Well, you may think you're still going to get the 10 grand a month, but in the meantime, you'll lease it to somebody on a month-to-month for 4 grand, and they'll put, you know, used ladies' clothes in there, or God knows what they're putting in there, even shoes or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. But the idea is they're on a month-to-month lease, and the minute I get the real rent and the real person, I'm booting your butt out. So there's probably been 4 or 5 of those people that have been in Armitage for like a decade. Once in a while they have to move next door, but they've never had to leave. Hmm. And it's humble. SP Futures still up 9.25. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, don't pick Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Russell Rose, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures up there in a quarter. Dow futures up 91. As it fuses up 27 down, I think it's another record. Or isn't it? Darn close. And it's a few stocks that just keep racing up. Boeing every day. Apple. You know, after I'm done with this, I'm going to ask Russell, what is the implied deal? I mean, how much China and the U.S. sling mud and God knows what else with each other? Apple's sitting there. There must be a deal on Apple, Russell. There has to be, because they are untouched by this. And you'd wonder if they wouldn't be a pawn in the war if there ever was one. But maybe there's never going to be one, hopefully.
Well, I think both sides need them a lot.
I guess. Yeah, oil up 3 cents, 75.26, 10-year yield 3.074. It started to go back down to 3, and it stopped, and now it's stabilizing. But it's not back to 3.10 either. DAX unchanged. FTSE up 43.6%. CAC around up 34.6%. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 159.7%. We got Hang Seng down 35.1%. Like I said, West Texas up 3 cents. Brent up 5. This is about the quietest day in the oil market we've had in a while. The spread has settled in on $9.60. It was over 10. Nat gas, which I'm going to be quizzing Russell on in a second. Russell, I've been given, Matty, how long have you been doing this? I've been given the natural gas report every morning, 271, 272, 269, 274. Now in 3 weeks, 3.16. I've never seen a move like that in there. It's like 10% in 14 days without a farmer's almanac saying the winter's going to be tough or anything. RBOB gas, 2.12. And we'll see, we've got gold down 40 cents after a pretty good day yesterday. Silver up 6 cents. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic moving pretty slowly this morning as folks head back to work. Many stayed up late to watch that disappointing Cubs game, and we have all kinds of issues to report. Kennedy, no accidents.
About the Cubs or the Cubs?
Well, not about the Cubs. The Cubs are done. But the traffic is not looking great. All kinds of delays. We had a significant crash on I-80 that we reported earlier. Still working to get that cleaned up at Joliet in the southwestern suburbs. Kennedy and Eden, slow moving. Same with the Eisenhower. Stevenson, not much better. Southside expressways are looking okay. No accidents to report on any of the expressways. Just lots of slow moving traffic. Off the expressways, we have a crash with injuries. Algonquin Road, which is Route 62 at Arlington Heights Road in the northwestern suburbs. That's causing delays. In the western suburbs, North Avenue, which is Route 64, right at Route 53, there's a crash. There's another crash in the western suburbs, Route 83 at 55th Street. That's causing delays. And Harlem is closed southbound between 80th and 83rd Street due to an accident as well. And we already talked about that shooting at 115th and between Keeler and Pulaski. There is a police investigation from an overnight shooting that has 115th closed. So all kinds of issues out there in the outlying areas. One other crash to report, North Shore, Route 41 at Route 137, which is Buckley Road. There is a crash. Weather today, it's going to be a weird day today. We're overcast and cool early. Then temperatures rise significantly and high winds come with it. We'll reach a high of 86, very steamy and windy degrees before we cool back down tomorrow and then finish the rest of the week in the 60s and low 70s. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 63 going up to a high of 86. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast, a high of 85. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 74. In sports, as we talked about a lot in the first hour, the Cubs season is now over. Managing just 2 runs in their last 22 innings at Wrigley, they lost to the Rockies last night 2-1 in 13 innings. Rockies will advance to take on the Brewers beginning tomorrow in the division series. The American League wild card is tonight. It will be the Yankees hosting the Athletics. Chief.
The ADP numbers came in at 230, which is a real high number.
Yeah, a little better.
Last month was 168, was kind of a clunker, but this month...
They revised last month up a little bit.
Yeah. It's a big number. So I think... what'd you think of...
people getting jobs.
Yeah, and
Help wanted signs.
I
see them.
They are at the...
And for lease signs.
Yeah. What'd you make of... Amazon coming out and raising their minimum wage to 15.
I think one of the things that Silicon Valley companies like to try and do is come across as being, millennial-like, friendly, wonderful places to work. And I think they decided that the reputation hit that they were taking with, Bernie Sanders beating up on, Bezos probably was worth giving everybody a raise. To be honest with you, I think they just kind of caved into to people picking on them. Although I can't imagine that anybody that shops at Amazon and likes the convenience there was going to start. I don't think it would have hit them in the pocketbook if they hadn't done it. But I think they just for the just to come across as a bunch of good guys, they chose to go about doing that.
I'm gonna have to see if my significant other can drag her friend over this weekend. She worked at one of the big place out in Bolingbrook.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say that none of those jobs were $10 an hour jobs. I mean, you had to do a lot of stacking and pulling and driving trucks. So
yeah.
I'm going to say that, and they got rid of everybody that was older for a while. I mean, they hired anybody who wanted to be when the place opened, and they pretty much tossed everybody out that was older after a little while, and there was no raises. I'm going to say that most of those jobs weren't $10 jobs to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which isn't to say some people aren't getting a raise there. I think they probably are, but I don't think you could. That was not the same job as moping around, Menards in the electrical aisle.
It was more like what I compare it to. I grew up in Memphis and went to what was Memphis State at the time. And that's where a big portion of anything you shipped FedEx went through Memphis. Even sometimes if you ship something from Chicago to Naperville, it would actually work its way through Memphis. They've streamlined it since. But, they would have the overnight sort that a bunch of the people I went to school with would participate in. Then they'd come to school. They'd still have their FedEx uniforms on. That's the kind of jobs that I equate what people do at Amazon with that. Where, we order a bunch of stuff and my uncle actually did it as a retiree for a short period of time where he'd go around and he would pick all, it was when you only did books. He'd pick all the different books off and put them in a box and they would get shipped off. But it was a very, very physical job. Not like you said, like working the aisles at Menards.
Well, no, I misspoke there. I'm trying not to.
What I thought you meant by that was just how physical it was.
No, I'm talking about if you're on the Home Depot now, especially the one by me, which used to be the biggest one in their thing until they put a couple close by.
Uh-huh.
You walk in and five people say hello to you.
Yeah.
Well, they don't know anything. I mean, anything they regarding the Home Depot.
Yeah.
So if you're going to, if you need something, they're going to point you in the direction of the aisle, and you got to find the electrical guy in there. Now, the electrical guy who actually knows the electrical stuff, he's not making minimum wage either. He's probably got stock in Home Depot, and he's probably got more money than we do. I mean, though the original guys did. The guys that all came from, if you get a guy who's 60-some years old still working at Home Depot, it's been there for 40 years, I'm going to say the guy's a millionaire. Because he got Home Depot stock.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When he started, I mean, I'm sure. I don't think the new people do, but I don't know that. But I'm saying the people that were working at this Amazon place absolutely were not the greeter at Walmart. They were either hustling or driving a forklift truck or doing something.
And
you're not going to get somebody for $10 an hour to do that. I don't think. Yeah, you get the right person for $10
an hour. Well, you will for 3 or 4 months, and then they're going to get burned out, and there's a huge turnover in those jobs,
right.
But there's not a lot of training that goes into them either.
But I think a Costco could come out tomorrow and say we're paying everybody $15. I think they already are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're already over that because they've never paid minimum wage. They've always paid higher, haven't they?
They were always priding themselves on attracting higher quality employees.
But if you look at their, and I'm not saying there's a one-to-one correlation, but there might be some correlation. One of the things I always look at when I look at places like that is revenue per employee. And Costco's revenue per employee is dramatically higher than Walmart's.
Yeah.
Now, it's hard to break out the Sam's versus the the Walmart. But people beat up on Sam's dramatically, and I think what's happened to Sam's is not Sam's fault if there is a Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that when Sam's first opened up, and I don't know if people, I don't know how I got on the subject, but we, totally different demographic than Costco.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my Sam's card, I get, because it's a business Sam's, I can show up at 7:30 in the morning before the regular schmoes go in.
You're a super member.
I'm a super something. Well, yeah. I'm a business member.
You're a special guy.
So if you go there in the morning, you see people hauling out cart upon cart. The guy with the local gas station is hauling out, 50 things of water and 40 things of Coke, and he's stocking his whole station, and he's not paying taxes there. He goes through, he's got the tax card, and he's essentially doing his wholesale shopping at Sam's. Where you don't see that at Costco. I don't know. I've never seen anybody not pay sales tax at Costco because he has his own business.
That's definitely a big difference between
the
two.
So the reason why Sam's is going downhill is because those places are going downhill. The amount of
they don't have the small restaurant business owner coming in.
Small business owner coming in.
I see that. Yeah.
And the store is not set up the same way for retail as a Costco. Now me, mm-hmm. I'm used to shopping there. To me, they're equal. Actually, I like Sam's a little better because if you want to get some like stuff for the office and things like that, they have more the commercial pots and pans and those kinds of things than a Costco does. The Costco on up on the north side, it's gotten so yuppie. You can't get breakfast sausage, and you can't buy a spare rib. Spare ribs are for low class people.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get back ribs, but you can't get spare ribs. That type of thing. but you can buy caskets there if you want. You can't buy a casket at Sam's, but places maneuver with their stuff. But I mean, I guess my point is that I don't know what my point was, but we're
talking about Sam's and Costco.
Yeah, Sam's and Costco. I was going to ask you what the orchestration of Powell not saying there's inflation when there obviously is in a lot of areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, when are we going to? And then you have the group that says without any wage inflation, you're never going to have inflation. Where wage inflation didn't come till the last 2 years or 3 years of the decade of inflation.
Well, I think the wage inflation is always the last step.
Yeah, it is.
It is, and I think we're on the brink of it.
Well,
I really do. I think it's we're getting very, very close to where it's difficult to find decent people, and really it's been years since I've seen a proliferation of help wanted signs, but they honestly are everywhere. And one of the things that I hear being blamed, or one of the person that I hear being blamed for this, is Trump, because we don't have enough people immigrating to the United States to take those open jobs, so we should allow more people into the U.S. Seriously. I heard that when I think it was Krugman said that yesterday. Yeah. Said we're going to have a bottleneck in the economy because of Donald Trump.
Well, we have,
and there might be some truth to that.
And this is, I'm going to give you one shot here, though.
Okay.
When I say wage inflation, I mean what you just said is spoken as a person I'm jealous of is 10 years younger. When I say wage inflation, I'm saying when you went and got your new job, mm-hmm. I guarantee you that you did not say they gave you, let's hope they gave you a 5-year package. I don't know what they did, but it's none of my business. But let's say they did. I guarantee you, you didn't say in the package, well, every year I want to, even if I don't get a raise, even if I stink as an employee, I want my cost of living going up every year because you're not going to drop me in wages because it's inflation. I guarantee you that never even crossed your mind.
It didn't, and it's probably and my wife's probably listening, and she's going to text, "Why didn't you do that?"
Well,
so thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
But what I'm saying, but back when I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're saying is that back in and actually yesterday, again, we're teaching the how the taking things from concept to reality at Loyola yesterday, and one of the things that I talked about was inflation. And how, right now, and the example that I had was, your rent is going to go up 3% a year. And because we started to figure inflation into the equation for discounting things back. And I said, in the past, it has been much, much higher. And yes, Unions do continue to negotiate in cost of living, and they tie it to the CPI as well.
Right.
I think if I had had that discussion 30 years ago in the environment, or maybe 40 years ago in the environment that we had in the 70s, where the cost of everything went up from year to year. I remember being a kid and fascinated by how much the price of a new car would go up from one model year to the next.
Yeah, it was like 10%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It was a noticeable difference. When I was on the Board of Education out in Hinsdale, we had to buy a new truck. We had to replace a truck that they had for 4 years. And when we replaced the truck, we got the exact same one for $20 less, which just blew me away.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I think, a clear indication that, and of course this was in, this was about a decade ago where we'd gone through 2008. But inflation is not something that is at the forefront of people's minds. It will be at some point in the next few, I think in the next few years.
Back in those days, it was because...
It was the thing that you thought of. If I had negotiated things in, I would have automatically said, again, 40 years ago, I would automatically said that my base is going to go up 5 or 10% every work anniversary.
But
it
'73.
Doesn't even come to me now.
'73 when it started, mm-hmm. it hits you right in the fanny because
it
was gas was 32 cents a gallon, and then it was a buck.
Mm-hmm.
And people had cars that didn't get very much mileage in those days. Hell, I had a Dynamic 88 with a 425 310 horse thing, and if I got 10, I was lucky. So and you didn't have a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
You weren't making very much. So instead of your fill up being $6, it was $20. That was a big deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, here's the thing, you economists. The numbers in the CPI, you deny, and they really didn't show up for a while. And after Volcker came in, and everybody had these escalation clauses, right? Well, the numbers, mm-hmm. it's a lagging indicator. So the last year or two, I don't think there was any inflation, Russell. And yet it kept showing. But what kept happening is it would still show 6% in the CPI. Everybody's getting a 6% raise when people had sort of lost, I'll say, regular pricing power.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually did have to raise your prices just to make up for the fact that you had to give everybody a raise.
Yeah, no, it was a circular thing.
Yeah, the numbers didn't match. So by the time that becomes part of the equation, the thing has probably been so long a problem and probably is actually in fact solved.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was really screwed up. But to say we've got to look for wage inflation to see, God bless it, Jerome Powell, read a book. I mean, mm-hmm. forgot. Anyway, so what do you make of something like this natural gas all of a sudden 10% up in 10 weeks or 7 weeks? I mean, I've never seen anything like that.
No, that's one that it's funny. I've got a one of my students who spends all of his time in the trading lab at CME. At Loyola. It's the CME group. They donated a lot Loyola. And that was a really cool spot. If you're ever going upstate,
is it downtown or up there?
It's downtown.
Okay.
If you're ever going upstate, and you go just past the crack McDonald's at Chicago and State, the next block up is the Loyola Business School on your right, and you'll actually see a little stock ticker in the window. It's really nice. But there's one kid who he actually has his own initial coin offering. He's always dressed in a suit at school. He's always hustling. He's short natural gas.
Wow.
And he's sitting there staring at the Bloomberg yesterday.
That's a huge
at school. I know. And he's staring at it. He's going, I just don't get it. I said, well, the first thing that you need to do is stop staring at the Bloomberg and checking it every 14 seconds. It's not going to get any better. And then you need to think about why you got short that. And he's, well, it seemed to be way, way ahead of itself. I'm like, oh my gosh. I had to have a little talk with him about, things can get irrational in both directions, especially commodities, and you're picking probably the worst one as far as that goes, because it does whip in both directions
an
awful lot.
I was talking yesterday, so you really don't know. That's why I would love to have somebody, and I don't even know they could know. It's one of the problems you have with problems or opportunities when you trade stuff like gold or oil or natural gas, because you have companies that are in that industry, and you sit there and go,
they,
all right.
And they always know better than you, and they're allowed to trade on what they know relative
right.
to you.
But they also, you could conceivably see gold racing up. All right, well, I would love to see that because I'm long it. Yesterday,
that
okay,
makes two of us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or oil, but you honestly don't say you pick Matt Weber Oil Company. Oh my God, oil went from 60 to 75. Matt Weber Oil Company must be doing pretty damn good, right? Because obviously they're making money at 60, they got to be rolling in it at 75, correct? I mean, it's the rest would just be all profit.
The answer is maybe.
Well, yeah, you don't really know if Matty Weber is a clever guy and says, you know what, I don't want this. I'm making money at 60. The last thing I want to do is this thing to go to 45 because then I don't make any money.
Exactly.
So he could have sold out. He could have sold futures out a year at 60.
Exactly. Yeah. So and you never really right. are 100% certain on
same
that.
Same way with the gold. Because Barrick Gold for a long time, gold went way up and they didn't go anywhere because they were hedged out a year or two. And all of a sudden, a year or two were up, then the stock shot up. So you sort of have to be careful. But even so, you have to believe that we're pushing 75 hours on this oil. The survivors of the $40 oil or $35 oil we were at a couple of years ago, I got to believe that they're back, you know, joining the cattleman's club like J.R. Ewing. I mean, right? If you're in the plus at 40 or 45, and all of a sudden you're getting like another 30 on top of that per barrel, you got to be going. You got to be like Jed Clampett.
Yeah.
I mean, same way with natural gas. I mean, the difference. I mean, what is 10% more? Because these guys, their margins are like so low normally.
And if they've given themselves any potential upside exposure, which options can do relative to futures, they're probably in pretty darn good shape right now.
Yeah, well, I wonder how.
Or they're thinking about locking it in. You know.
Well, you know, that's sort of interesting. Way back, I can drag my brother on some morning. When he traded on the Dan was on the CBOE for a little while, but he spent a lot of time in CBOT trading corn options. You know, so Dan is, you know, he's been managing money here at PTI and being a president for a while, so he's probably not as up on it as he was when he was down there, but Dan doesn't forget much. So I'm going to say that he's still an expert on that stuff. And he would say that there was a program, Russell, and we're kind of skipping around, but it's sort of the same subject. We talk about all this crop insurance and price insurance and stuff. Now, crop insurance is sort of different, where if a hailstorm comes and over your farm and wrecks your crop, that's kind of what crop insurance is for, right? It's not really a price insurance thing, but
it's
they had a pilot program in Indiana for the price supports. I think they just either they gave money to a small number of people, or they essentially said don't hedge with the futures, just buy some puts.
Yeah.
So in case it goes down, you make some money. If it goes up, you're still involved. And Dan will tell you what year it was if he remembers. But the farms that did that, it ended up being way cheaper for the federal government. The farmers made out better. And I think after 2 years, it was canceled.
Why? But why? Because the price went up for just, 2 years, and they didn't make money off the puts.
I don't know.
So they saw it as throwing money away.
I think it took. It probably took some of the.
I would assume that the market moved higher both of those years, and it's like, well, why are we buying these?
You know,
puts?
It had to
well,
do with.
The, and then the next year, it was down.
It had to do with the co-ops were taken out of the business. They like to do the hedging for you, cluck cluck. I'm not sure why, but it was very. Everybody branded it as very successful, and it got pulled.
They did better than if they had just they had sold futures because they had a couple of good years
or
there.
Did nothing. Or, you know,
that's one of the issues with the using options. If you use them a couple of times and they cost you a little bit, and you got more peace of mind, but it didn't. You know, you didn't need them. You think, well, why did I spend that whatever $1,000 on options?
How many years have you needed your auto insurance?
Oh my gosh! I hate to even say.
Well, you got kids.
I'm gonna need it because I got someone who just turned 14. When the first time I took her, I let her drive my car a little bit when she was 12 in an empty parking lot, and somehow she was able to land it right on an island that had a couple of light posts on it. She landed it right between it, but when I said hit the brake, she pushed on the accelerator, and yeah, that one's gonna, so, you know, if you that, had a, that's gonna be when I have to use the auto insurance.
Now, if you had a big 3/4 ton truck,
but I've
you
never
might have
had,
right over.
I've never been in an at fault accident.
Knock on
actually
wood.
Never. I know that's why I'm being all hesitant here. I have never ever had to use my auto insurance.
And every New Year's Eve, do you weep into your New Year's Eve drink that you didn't?
No,
you didn't
absolutely
the car?
Not. I try not to think about it. But, so but you buy, no, a BMW, I mean, I know where you're going with this, and I know we're running out of time.
It'll buy a BMW at 100, buy the option or the insurance for $4 and have it go to 200. Not, only a few people would complain about the $4.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a...
But I think that the government mentality where they say we spent money on these options and apparently a bunch of speculators in Chicago made money and we didn't, we're not doing it anymore.
I'm saying it was just too simple. We couldn't hire enough people.
Yeah.
That's another. That's
that
another,
too.
That too. SP futures up 10.25. Dow futures up 94. NASDAQ futures up 29. Thank you. Russell Oil up 7 cents. 75.30. Hanging in there. I don't know.
Yep.
I think West Texas might make, or Brent makes it 95. That's my prediction. Be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.